Good morning, everybody. And thank you all for being here to share the Dharma together. And a welcome to our guest from the seminar yesterday. And I really apologize for the shortage of mats. That's embarrassing. In listening to a Taisho is just another form of Zazen. The words of the Taisho are an attempt on the part of the teacher or whoever is giving the talk to, I guess we're calling them Dharma talks nowadays, but it's an attempt by the teacher to express the Dharma, to encourage as well, as best one can, in words. Words are not it, of course. So don't try to hang on to the word. Don't try to parse out the meanings of things. Just open yourself to the words. Let them flow through you like a river. The meaning may come clear at some later date. You never know. But just practice listening. With an open mind and an open heart. Before we get into the body of the Taisho, let me say a little something about this week. On Friday, something quite extraordinary is going to happen. There will be a transition of power from one political party to another, from one political orientation to another, from one, one might even say some deep philosophy of governance, from one group to another, one administration to another. This is an extraordinary thing. For over 250 years, this has happened on a regular basis. Not once has there been a palace rebellion, a coup d'etat, a military takeover by a junta. Even in the depths of our most painful period of the Civil War, this transition has happened in a regular and orderly manner. This is unique in the history of nations. Absolutely unique. And what I think it shows is that this is essentially, in spite of everything, in spite of whatever our feelings might be, this is essentially a peaceful nation. There are some in this room who are feeling maybe discouragement, maybe frustration, maybe even a sense of mourning that what they wanted to happen did not happen. There are others who might be feeling a sense of relief, of gratitude, that something that they wanted to happen did happen. These feelings are natural. We're human. We have our desires and our aspirations for our country as well as for ourselves, for our culture, for our society. Let these feelings happen. Bear witness to them. But do not project them into the future. We have no idea what the future will be. All we have is this moment. All we can do is live this moment, realize this moment, and hopefully eventually realize the ultimate nature of this moment is the nature of the universe, which is essentially joyous. So, what is enlightenment? Sometimes we might get the notion that enlightenment, sometimes we call it no mind, There's a kind of mental blankness, a great void. Or maybe it's a state of constant bliss, where we all float around on a pink cloud singing Kumbaya. Well, no. It is said that the Buddha spent his entire career saying no. No to any possible notion, thought, idea, image, or conception of the great reality. I like Robert Aitken's definition. Enlightenment is the deportment of Buddhas. Deportment, behavior, actions, words, how one comes forth. It is one thing to intuit the great reality as one sits on the mat in or out of Sishin. But what then? The Buddha got up from under the Bodhi tree and came forth to preach the Dharma. Only then did he really become the Buddha. We read stories of the great masters coming forth with a shout, a blow, a jab. But where does this activity come from? It comes from the practice of Zazen. But don't get hung up on notions of what Zazen is supposed to be either, or how it is supposed to come forth. In our Zazen instruction, we tell everyone to count the breaths and to just calmly return to the practice again and again and again. Keizan's verse to transmission number 6 in the Denko Roku, transmission of the lamp, reads in part, "Most people want to have it pure white, but sweep as you will, you cannot empty the mind." No, an empty mind is not the object. The object is the sweeping, the constant, persistent letting go. When thoughts come up, don't pursue them, but don't try to fight them off either. Just let them be, and they will pass away by themselves. And what about words and actions? They arise and pass away as well. They too must be let go of, even as they occur. In time, we begin to realize all thoughts, all words, all actions arise of themselves. It is when they are connected into illusory chains of cause and effect that the ego self arises and attempts to rule the universe. Something of a farce. Do thoughts and words and actions ever unify? Yes, they do. When the ego self is seen thoroughly and let go of altogether, when there is no person. And when does that happen? In this present moment, in the infinite here and the eternal now, this very transcendent moment. It is when thoughts, words, and actions are not separate from each other and not separate from practice, not separate from the moment. To take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is to live in the here and now, the only refuge there is. Do we still experience cause and effect, karma, and the world of time and space? Of course we do. Why? Well, sorry to say this, but it's because we are not yet fully realized Buddhas. Yes, we are all Buddha fundamentally, but we have yet to fully trust and live out of that fact. So we use our illusory existence in time, space, and karma, where practice happens, where realization happens, where the bodhisattva rises to transcend time and space. Can we live like that? Letting all phenomena arise and pass away by themselves? After all, that is the nature of things, impermanence. if we cling to a thought or to a chain of thoughts. That's following the mind road into delusion. If we try to fight them off and live in a kind of blank state of mind, that is diving into the abyss, trying to make your living in a ghost cave. Are there those to whom we can look as examples? Yes, there are. The middle way is a very high standard, but no one epitomizes that standard better than Master Zongshan of Zhaozhou. The great masters of Tang China were each unique in their own way. Ma Zu was one who filled any room he entered. It said he walked like a tiger and looked like a bull. Huang Bo was 7 feet tall. Pretty hard to miss. Lin Ji is famous for his dynamic shouts and blows. On first meeting Zhao Zhou, one might not be so impressed with his appearance. He's just another old dusty monk in an impoverished monastery in a mid-sized city in northern China from which he took his name. He never struck anyone, as far as we know. He didn't shout or engage in unconventional or eccentric behavior. He slept on a dirt floor next to the ox shed. And yet, during his long life, he became a legend. The rich and powerful traveled long distances to see him. Even Dogen, who had little use for most of the Chinese masters, said, "Before Zhao Zhou, there was no Zhao Zhou. After Zhao Zhou, there was no Zhao Zhou." Nowadays, when a student comes to Doksan, sometimes a shout or some wild action, totally free, is a good answer to demonstrate a koan or question. But Robert Aiken Roshi was suspicious of zenny answers. I mean, how often does one yell, "Cuts!" in real life? Case 52 in the Blue Cliff Record reads, "A monk said to Zhao Zhou, 'For a long time I have heard of the widely renowned stone bridge of Zhao Zhou, but now that I've come here, I see just a simple log bridge.'" Zhao Zhou said, "You just see the log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge." The monk said, "What is the stone bridge?" Zhao Zhou said, "It lets asses cross. It lets horses cross." So the monk challenges Zhao Zhou, "A great master, you certainly don't look like one," as if a master is supposed to look like something. But Zhao Zhou is completely at ease. He responds to the challenge as a tree responds to the wind. And at the same time, he opens the monk's mind, all with no effort whatever. Zhao Zhou doesn't defend himself. He sees directly, without judgment, opinion, or any sort of defense. After all, if there is no self, no Zhao Zhou, what is there to defend? Zhao Zhou's teaching was called Lips and Tongue Zen. It is said that the light played around his mouth when he spoke. I wonder how he would feel about such myths. Of all the Zen masters, he was the most present and the most honest, even or maybe especially with himself. He did not fear or try to avoid words, because his words were as much Zhao Zhou as his blood and his bone. They arose as naturally as a flower blooms. Bodhidharma said, "Not speaking a single word is called the principle of not speaking falsely." Well, Zhao Zhou never spoke falsely. His was the speaking of no speaking, the teaching of no teaching. He was none other than who he was in the moment, not an iota of separation between his thoughts, words, and actions. Case 45 in the Blue Cliff Record reads, a monk asked Zhao Zhou, all the dharmas, meaning all the myriad things, return to the One. Where does the One return to? Zhao Zhou said, when I was in Jingzhou province, I made a hempen shirt. It weighed 7 pounds. All the dharmas return to the One. Where does the One return to? It's one of those unanswerable questions that monks or masters are always coming up with. And yet, answer we must. As with all koans, the answer must come forth from our practice. There is no intellectualizing, cogitating, imagining, or ruminating that will help. You have to drop body and mind and see into the matter directly. And what is it to see into the matter? It is to see what is before you as your own true self. No inside, no outside. When I was in Jingzhou province, I made a hempen shirt. It weighed 7 pounds. Is this a non sequitur or what? How many teachers would answer in that way? Where does the one return to? How would you answer that question? Is Zhao Zhou's answer Zhao Zhou returning to the One? Or is it the One returning to Zhao Zhou? Or does Zhao Zhou, or any of us for that matter, need to return to anything from anywhere? Case 30 in the Blue Cliff Record reads, a monk asked Zhao Zhou, I have heard that you closely followed Nanchuan, meaning that I have heard you have inherited the mantle of Nanchuan. Is that true? Zhao Zhou said, Zhenzhou province produces big radishes. What in heaven's name do radishes, whatever their size, have to do with Nanchuan? What about a 7-pound shirt and the great matter? Are you sitting there wondering what profound meaning is hidden in them? Are shirts and radishes symbols of our Buddha nature? Don't get hung up on notions of radishes or shirts and profound symbols of something or other. A radish is a radish. A shirt is a shirt. They put forth no effort to be what they are. Our practice is the practice of sitting, shikantaza, the breath, mu. It is not about constantly noodling with koans. When body and mind drop away, the way stands clear and undisguised. Zhao Zhou and all the masters stand clear and undisguised. If the self, the ego, tries to understand Zhao Zhou, he is as impenetrable as a 10,000-foot wall. If there is no self, he is as clear as a pool of still water. Thoughts arise, thoughts of radishes, shirts, cabbages and kings, and that's fine. It's what they do. It's when we chase after them, jump on the train, follow the mind road that we get into trouble. There is no connection between one thought and another. The only connections are the attachments that we ourselves create. Maybe I'm attached to these particular cases that I quoted because they seem to me to be the koans of an old man. I'm finding that as I get older, I worry less and less about whether I'm a Buddhist or not. I wonder if Zhao Zhou would call himself a Buddhist or if he would call himself anything. Teaching of no teaching. If there is intent to transmit or teach anything, there is error. So I, and I suspect my fellow teachers, are really in error these days, but we all try to do better. Dongshan's verse on the fifth of the five stages, arriving within concurrence, reads, "Not falling into being or non-being. Who can be in accord with this? Everyone longs to leave the eternal flux, not just to live in harmony, but to return and sit by the charcoal fire." What a wonderful metaphor. Just return and sit by the charcoal fire, completely at ease. Does the mind go blank? No. We give the mind the same liberty we give the world, the universe, to be as it is. They are not in any way separate. At the end of the Wu Men Guan, Wu Men warns us to be alert and never unclear as to wear chains and an iron yoke. And Robert Aitken's wonderful commentary on that. I dropped off those fetters long ago, thank goodness. I find it so pleasant to go to the beach, to look at the clouds, to gossip with children. In a dim state of mind, I rinse and wash. Sitting in the interview room, I lose track of time. Now I must go to the dojo. Let's see, where is my stick? Ah, here it is, right in my hand. Robert Aitken also told the story once of Wang Bo, who was walking about the Zendo during a late night sitting. He saw his disciple Lin Ji sitting in that same vague, dim state. And he whispered to the head monk that, "Hey, that young man is doing really well." The monk said, "Huh? Yeah?" And Wang Bo struck the ton with his stick to wake up the head monk. Sitting by the charcoal fire. Coming forth, the mind coming forth in complete freedom. There's this wonderful poem called Fish by the Japanese poet Shinkichi Takahashi in Robert Bly's collection News of the Universe. It goes like this. I hold a newspaper reading. Suddenly my hands become cow's ears. They turn into Busan, the South Korean port. Lying on a mat, spread on the bankside stones, I fell asleep. But a willow leaf, breeze stirred, brushed my ear. I remained just as I was, near the murmurous water. When young, there was a girl who became a fish for me. Whenever I wanted fish broiled in salt, I'd summon her. She'd get down on her stomach to be sun-cooked on the stones, and she was always ready. Alas, she no longer comes to me. An old, benighted drake, I hobble homeward. But look, my drake feet become horse hooves. Now they drop off and, stretching marvelously, become the tracks of the Tokaido railway line. Together with all beings, we realize the way.